Ladies and gentlemen, good evening and welcome to Q1 FY26 results conference call of Bajaj Auto Limited. My name is Avirat Jain, and I'll be your moderator for the day. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the initial remarks from management. Should you need assistance during this conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Anand Newar, Head Investor Relations from Bajaj Auto Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Avirat. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the call today. Welcome to Bajaj Auto's Q1 FY26 earnings conference call. On today's call, we have with us Mr. Rakesh Sharma, Executive Director, and Mr. Dinesh Thapar, Chief Financial Officer. We will begin our call with the opening remarks from Rakesh on the business and operational performance for the quarter, followed by Dinesh, who will take you through the financial highlights. We will then open the forum for Q&A. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Anand. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you very much also for joining us. I think this time we are having the call at a decent time, so I'm sure you will give us some credit for that. Yeah, I'm delighted to say that financial year 26 has commenced on a strong note, with the overall performance in quarter one delivering a robust set of financials. We closed the quarter with a top line of over 12,500 crores, EBITDA of almost 2,500 crores, and a PAT of approximately 2,100 crores. These results were delivered against a backdrop of a volatile and intensely competitive environment. The quarter for us was powered by several top-notch performances. In exports, actually, we achieved the highest-ever retails outside of Nigeria, and in commercial vehicles exports, we achieved the highest-ever retails in quarter one. Highest-ever premium bike sales, e-auto leadership, and a surging EV business while improving profitability, and yet again, a solid performance by the spares BU. Let me now get into the business unit-level performance, beginning with exports. The BU grew volumes by 16% in Q1. As exports recovered, our premium brands, Dominar and Pulsar, continued to enrich the mix, with Pulsar growing at over 21%, delivering obvious benefits to revenue and EBITDA performance. As you know, we monitor the top 30 overseas markets very closely, as they collectively account for over 70% of the emerging market opportunity. Of these top 30, in 25 markets, the industry grew collectively by 17% in Q1, signaling a continued revival. In these very important markets, Bajaj outpaced the industry growth and grew by 27%. LATAM and Asia are firmly on the growth path. There are countries in Africa, particularly the largest market of Nigeria, where the trading environment remains uncertain, and there we need to avoid any unnecessary buildup of stock. Sales in Bajaj Brazil again touched 7,000 units in this quarter. With production capacity set to get expanded in Q2, higher sales will get unlocked. We are on track to expand capacity to 50,000 units per annum this year. The new Pulsar portfolio, the Pulsar 400NS, the new 150s, and the new 125s, were all launched in key markets around the world in quarter one to a very good reception, and they hold the promise of accelerating growth for us in their segments. The global tariff issue has not had any significant direct impact on us, as exports to the U.S., which would be vulnerable to higher tariffs, are mainly the KTM and Triumph brands and constitute less than 1% of our total revenue. Business operations, including production, have commenced at KTM Austria. This has also unlocked the export of KTM motorcycles from India to KTM's overseas markets. These used to constitute about 5%-6% of our total exports and had dropped to nil. Given this,
performance of the emerging markets, our strengthening competitive position, and the return of KTM exports. Overall, we expect to continue to maintain the growth tempo in the coming quarters at similar levels as has been achieved this quarter and previously. Now coming to domestic motorcycles. The motorcycle industry performance in quarter one on a YOY basis was flattish, though slightly better than the YOY performance before. The 125cc plus segment continued to perform better than the 100cc segment. Geographically, the southern and eastern parts of the country declined. The west was flattish, while the north and central regions grew. Advancement of monsoons, high levels of inflation, particularly in big urban areas, dampened the industry performance. Through the quarters, we witnessed strong tactical countermeasures by all companies, particularly in the entry-level segment. Our approach in Q1 continued to differentiate between segments. Given the slim profitability of the entry-level segment, our tactical actions were underweighted in the segment, resulting in a loss of market share of about 2 percentage points compared sequentially with Q4. As stated previously, our strategic focus has been the 125cc plus segment. Here, we had experienced a loss of market share in the period of Q3 of the previous financial year and early parts of Q4. Provoked by that, product and pricing interventions were initiated towards the end of Q4 in March, February and March, and they have started to show positive results with a sequential improvement in market share in Q1 of about 3 percentage points, result in the 125cc plus segment, resulting in an overall market share of 15% in Q1, which is a slight improvement sequentially over Q4. We will remain focused on growing our share in 125cc plus segment through concentration of our resources and efforts, driving both product interventions and tactical support as needed in this segment. In this regard, a new thematic TV campaign for Pulsar has already commenced, and some of you may have seen it during the final test match. The 100cc segment will be supported based on the impact on absolute profitability. Hence, we expect the construct of market share progression to remain similar to Q1. We will advance in 125cc plus segment, perhaps a decline in the 100cc segment based on competitive intensity, and therefore a slightly slower advancement on the overall motorcycles market share. Coming to commercial vehicles, our three-wheeler view, the industry saw strong growth of 11% in Q1 on a YOY basis, driven by an almost doubling of e-auto volumes, with the e-segment also growing at 11%, with the e-rig segment also growing at 11%. Our business continues to perform strongly in ICE. High levels of 75% market share were maintained. In the EV segment, we achieved the pole position in Q1 with an over 35% market share in the e-auto segment. The leap forward was powered by the highly successful introduction of the 7012 variant, a wide-body three-wheeler with best-in-class range, specifically tailored for the large ticketing segment in semi-urban and rural areas. This has lifted both the ASPs and profitability of the EV segment beyond the ICE segment in three-wheelers. The mobility needs of middle India are expanding furiously, and we expect the category to grow and for us to outpace the industry. We have maintained a 100,000 unit plus unit run rate for 8 consecutive quarters in our three-wheeler business, anchored by our undisputed leadership in ICE and the steady scale-up of our electric portfolio. We will further advance this position on the e-rickshaw front. Our product has now completed extended testing and will be launched in a few key markets by the middle of August itself. This will give us an entry into a very large segment of over 40,000 units per month. Our approach would be to start small and observe the dynamics closely so that we may craft a playbook to upgrade the large, low-quality, lead-acid-based E-Rix to our superior solution, but at premium pricing. On electric two-wheelers in Chetak, the industry continues to average close to 100,000 units per month, growing over 30% year-on-year, with penetration in scooters reaching to 20% plus levels. Our Chetak has more than doubled its volumes over the same period and contributed nearly 50% to the industry's overall incremental volumes. As a result, our market share for the quarter rose to 21%, up from 12% in Q1 FY25. This has been driven by a broader product portfolio and expansion of the exclusive Chetak network, as well as other points of sale. This quarter, we expanded the Chetak 3.5 series, offering larger boot space, higher range, and faster charging. Now, the industry split between products priced at 1 lakh above and below 1 lakh is 40-60. 40% of the industry is now products which are priced above 1 lakh and 60% below 1 lakh. But for us, it is 85-15. With market share in both 1 lakh segment leading the industry, our market share in the above 1 lakh segment is now at 31% plus, which is the top position. Higher volumes, a better mix, and new products have not just expanded market share and customer franchise, they've positively impacted both revenue and profitability. However, as we all know, we are facing supply chain headwinds due to the HRE magnet issue. Non-availabilities had begun to compromise production in June itself, resulting in some shortfalls in deliveries to dealers in June. July has seen a 50% shortfall. While we expect production to be in August to be better than July, we may still see a shortfall of similar levels of 50% in this quarter in Chetak and about 25 to 30% or so in e-autos. Multiple options, both short-term and long-term, are being pursued at the same time, ranging from simply working with authorities to reopen the flows of HRE magnets, as well as to developing alternate sources and alternatives to HRE-based components. The situation is evolving every day, and as can be imagined, this is an area of very high focus for resolution, and we expect the issue to be indeed resolved in the short term, restoring the industry-leading momentum that our EV portfolio had achieved. While complete restoration should happen by end of the quarter, we are keen to de-risk the supply chain of this important segment, and that complete de-risking should take about 6 to 9 months. Coming to Pro Biking, our premium motorcycle BU comprising KTM and Triumph brands. Together, the two brands built nearly 26,000 units in the domestic market during the quarter, marking a strong 20% year-on-year growth and a gain in market share within their respective segments. The steady growth is an outcome of our strategy of launching authentic and purposive products, building the brands through curated top-class activation and continuous expansion of the network, particularly for Triumph, which is now available in 80 cities through 130 stores. Triumph expanded its portfolio with the launch of the all-new Triumph Scrambler 400X. With its category-leading combination of performance, specs, and finish, infused with Triumph's iconic Scrambler DNA and real-world adventure capability, it further builds on the success of the modern classic 400cc proposition in India.
On the KTM side, we introduced the Enduro 390R, a bike engineered for true dual sport performance. It sets a new benchmark in this segment for on and off-road versatility. In both brands, a special effort is being made to develop the big bike business, which should dramatically differentiate our brands, aligning them closer to their original DNA, besides creating new business opportunities. We have continued to invest in top-class activation as a key route to build both KTM and Triumph brands through curated experiences such as Distinguished Gentleman Rides and other thematic rides for Triumph. And in KTM, these programs known as ProXP continue to deliver ready-to-race outings, an example being the Great Ladakh Tour, now in its fifth season, fully booked within 48 hours of opening registrations, reflecting the brand's strong emotional connect with adventure riders in the country. Finally, a couple of quick updates. Foremost, our 100% subsidiary BACL, Bajaj Auto Credit Limited, had an excellent quarter with penetration scaling to 40% plus levels. It has now acquired 1 million customers with an AUM of 12,000 crores and built a business driven by the twin pillars of digital first and robust operational efficiencies, thus delivering a PAT of 102 crores in quarter one. Secondly, as I mentioned, Spares, this highly profitable business, grew by 19% on the back of better distribution and portfolio management and looks set to maintain the growth tempo. Looking ahead, our key focus areas remain unchanged. We'll focus on 6 things: competitive growth in the strategically important 125cc plus segment in domestic motorcycles, sustain export momentum with big emphasis on building superior positions in the better markets amongst in our portfolio, resolve the EV supply chain issues with speed to regain the momentum in the EV segments, steadily grow KTM and Triumph business through product activation and network management, drive profitability and growth, balancing them in the most optimal way through robust operations, and continue to establish and build capability in BACL to ensure sustainable class-leading performance. With that, let me hand it over to Dinesh for an update on the financial performance.
Thank you, Rakesh. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us on the call this evening. Before I get into the specifics of our financial performance, let me start by saying we continue to deliver very resilient financial results with consistent revenue and profit growth in tandem. This quarter, both revenue and EBITDA came in strong at 12,500 crores and 2,500 crores respectively, making it amongst our top three results in terms of size. What makes the performance noteworthy is the context in which it has been delivered. We navigated through a quarter that saw domestic demand softening, an unfavorable currency environment for much of the period, some constraint on our electric vehicle supplies, and a partial offset of commodity inflation through pricing in what continued to be a very highly competitive marketplace. Rakesh has already spoken to you about the markets in some detail and in the business and industry context. So to leave you with time for questions, I'll confine my remarks here specifically to commodity and currency before moving to the numbers. As you may recall, in our May earnings call, we had indicated that given the dollar weakness, the INR was getting stronger, and therefore foreign exchange realization was emerging to be a headwind for the quarter. We had closed at that point of time quarter four dollar realizations at 86.5. Through April and May, realization dropped even further to 85.5 and 85.2 respectively, in keeping with the update that we had shared with you. However, the trend reversed somewhat in June, with realization firming back to the 86 cents. As a result, the average realization for the quarter for our exports stood at 85.6, about a rupee lower than the previous quarter, translating into a modest drag on both sequential revenue and margins. On the commodity side, we had expected for a potential cost impact of close to 100 basis points. That was factoring in inflation, aluminium, firmness and steel, and ABS, and the additional cost impact in the rollout of the OBD2B norms. If you recall, that's what I had signaled at that one time. However, as the quarter progressed, we had some relief coming from cost savings initiatives and better steel settlement rates later in the quarter. This has helped cushion the impact to an extent. In the end, overall material cost pressure, inclusive of the regulatory cost increases, landed in the range of about 70 basis points relative to the 100 basis points that we had originally estimated. And that flowed through into the reported margins as well. Let me now turn to the financial results, starting with the volumes. Overall volumes for the quarter were about flattish compared to a year ago. Much of the revenue growth, therefore, of 6% has come from mix. Underlying this is double-digit growth on premium motorcycles, commercial vehicles, and Chetak, which has driven the highest ever quarter one revenue on the domestic front. And this is more than made up for the domestic motorcycle performance, which although has improved over the previous quarter, has had a subdued effect on the overall enterprise growth. Exports continues to be a story of recovery and resurgence. Even though volumes are still 20-25% lower than their FY22 peak, the revenue from exports has reached an all-time high. This is the result of better realizations coming in from the dollar and a richer product mix. Latin America, which we've been calling out for several quarters now, has continued to perform very well, and Africa, on the other hand, has trended upwards. Total realization on exports came in a tad north of 500 million for this quarter. Spares revenue closed at close to 1,600 crores, continued to grow very well, and has now gone past their earlier peak of the last quarter. The other notable highlight for the quarter was the continued strong performance of our electric portfolio, as seen over the past few quarters, where we gained leadership in electric two-wheelers. This quarter, we attained leadership in the electric three-wheeler category. Overall, electric vehicles contribute more meaningfully now, accounting for a tad over 20% of domestic revenue. And in this quarter, despite the fact that given the rare earth magnets issue that we had supplies only to the extent of 60% of our plans on e-two-wheelers in June and 75% in electric three-wheelers for June month. That said, more importantly, with the recent launch of the Chetak 3.0 series, the new affordable variant, now the entire Chetak portfolio has made a shift to the new floorboard battery platform, which essentially offers a far superior functionality, better performance, and much better unit economics over the earlier models. In all, our EV portfolio profitability has improved significantly from the red ocean we were once in not too long ago to now getting to EBITDA margin for the entire portfolio, very close to double digits. So between electric two-wheelers and electric three-wheelers, the electric portfolio is now very close to double-digit EBITDA margin. Thanks to the work done on R&D, localization, and procurement, this is now landing well and yielding benefits. Of course, the profitable electric three-wheelers make up for Chetak, but the unit economics of Chetak per se have improved over time, and we now have some of the models already clocking in EBITDA positive. The drag at the enterprise margin level, therefore, has reduced, allowing us to expand now more sustainably. Let me now turn to EBITDA. At 2,482 crores, EBITDA grew 3% year-on-year. Margins for the quarter came in at 19.7%. A sequential moderation of about 50 basis points that I had queued, if you recall, almost entirely on account of the adverse dollar realization that played out mainly through April and May. Price versus cost came in broadly in line with what I had mentioned on our last call. Inflation arising from commodity cost inflation and the impact of the OBD2 norms, 2B norms came in at close to 70 basis points that I just mentioned. On pricing, we were very selective with our approach, taking price up in parts of the portfolio while dropping prices in parts of the motorcycle business to revive its competitive growth momentum. In net terms on pricing, the ups and downs almost balanced out each other through the quarter. The net inflation in turn then was made up by a richer than anticipated mix. A key factor leading to this was the revival of KTM exports. You might recall that when we last spoke, we had mentioned that we suspended exports to the KTM business through quarter four, and that was fundamentally because we had anticipated a risk on our receivables through the pendency of the restructuring process. With that having been resolved in May, we resumed exports, and that in turn has helped both the exports performance and margin delivery.
On a year-on-year basis, margin performance was similar with 50 basis points drop in margins, but the contributing factors were slightly different. Unlike the sequential trend where adverse currency weighed on margins, the year-on-year picture was aided by favorable currency movement. However, the benefit was offset by the increase in other expenses that you will see on account of a variety of factors as the business has grown. Moving to profit after tax, at about 2,100 crores, profit were up 5% year-on-year, marking the second highest PAT delivery to date. The peak was in quarter three of FY25, which was at 2,109 crores, which was supported by the festive season tailwind, and therefore to have delivered a PAT nearly at par with that benchmark in a quarter without the seasonal lift reflects the underlying resilience of our earnings.
Our balance sheet continues to remain strong, backed by continued free cash flow generation. This quarter we added about 1,200 crores in free cash, taking our surplus cash position to a tad under 17,000 crores. Well managed and available to be strategically deployed across growth vectors. CapEx during the quarter stood at approximately 100 crores, which will progressively go up to about 600-700 crores for the rest of the year, with spend split almost equally to support EV capabilities and ICE innovation. A quick word on consolidated results. Consolidated revenue was up 10%, while consolidated PAT came in at 2,210 crores, up 14% year-on-year. Driven in a large part by the strong performance of BACL that you just heard, which continues to scale up rapidly. You recall that in the same period last year, the business was still in the early ramp-up mode, expanding its front-end footprint and building back-end capabilities. This quarter, it has delivered a PAT in excess of 100 crores, which is essentially nearly double its full-year profit of the last year. We remain optimistic about the growth in this business and have infused 300 crores into BACL this quarter, taking our cumulative investment to 2,700 crores. AUM now stands to 1,200 crores as of June 8. Looking ahead, 12,000 crores as of June 8. Looking ahead into the next quarter, we are beginning to see some cost pressures across commodities, notably in aluminium, platinum, copper, and rubber. That said, our ongoing cost reduction program will continue to deliver benefits, and we've taken some pricing actions that is broadly expected to offset the inflation. So net terms are expecting it to be a flat cost versus price quarter in the current one. The currency has been very volatile off late, but expected to be a tailwind for the quarter given the levels at which it's currently trending. And where operating leverage will finally settle for the quarter will be a function of how much supply we are able to pull through on the electric front. You've just heard our most recent estimate looks like we will be able to deliver anywhere between 50 to 60% of our plans on the electric two-wheelers and anywhere between 70 to 80% on electric three-wheelers, right? But that situation is fluid and evolving by the day. That said, it appears that we should see margin trending back towards the FY25 average levels, even as we look to invest some of the tailwind that's coming through on account of the dollar realization into competitive actions. Before I close, let me spend a minute on KTM. While I will not get into the details of the transaction, as there's enough and more in the public domain, and there's a postal ballot that is currently out with sufficient detail, we had discussed that KTM is uncharted territory in some ways, but we believe it's a space with significant synergy and long-term promise. As for the insolvency process, the creditors had a period of 2 weeks post the 23rd May deadline hearing at which an order was passed. There were no objections that were raised during the two-week period, and therefore the insolvency court in Austria, through its orders of 16th of June 2025, confirmed the restructuring plan that was proposed by KTM, and therefore the entire restructuring proceedings now have been concluded and the business is back in many ways outside of that legal process. The orders are binding and no further appeals can be made against them. Having been through that process, we have therefore progressed substantially on seeking regulatory approvals, essentially from four fronts, from the Austrian Takeover Commission, the Austrian and the EU Foreign Investment Control, the EU Foreign Subsidies Control and Merger Control Authorities across six countries,
all of which should hopefully be done in a couple of months. We've already received approvals from the Investment Authority and 3 of the 6 markets in which merger controls have been filed, and we expect to be able to conclude the rest of them, all going well, over the next couple of months. Upon successful completion of the regulatory approvals, we plan therefore to move to a control position and exercise the call options, and then start to work very closely and constructively to restore financial discipline and reposition the business for sustainable value creation and growth. With that, let me hand the call back to Anand and open up the floor for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dinesh. With this, we can open the forum for Q&A, please.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets when asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Kapil Singh from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, sir, and congratulations on a good performance for the quarter. My first question is on the domestic two-wheeler market. I would say year-to-date market has been a bit soft. So what is your understanding of, what is driving this weakness? Is it coming from urban or rural markets? And, what is your new launch pipeline for the domestic industry?
So, over the last couple of quarters, you're right, the market has been flattish, if not slightly negative. Particularly in quarter one, after some good growth in April, which was driven by concentrated dates in the April and early May season period. I think one of the factors which is acting is the advancement of the monsoons. Usually, we never see monsoons in so many parts of the country in June. But this time, there's not just monsoon, but a heavy monsoon in many, many parts of the country. Secondly, there's no doubt that some parts of large urban markets are experiencing a greater slowdown than rest of the markets. And this is largely because of inflation. While I know that the overall inflation numbers are low, but relevant inflation like rentals, etc., have reduced the purchasing power, and we do pick up feedback from customers saying that they're postponing the purchase. They're not canceling it. When we do loss sale analysis, we find that there are some postponements and which are specifically because of this reason. And thirdly, as we enter, as we come closer to the season, I've noticed that the tendency to postpone purchase to the festive time becomes accentuated. Because, you know, that's the consumer behavior nowadays. People are, they think that they will get better deals. And this behavior is shaped not just by us, but by, you know, actually by e-commerce companies, things like Black Friday sale type of stuff. So that shaped the consumer behavior to concentrate, to sort of sharpen the peaks during the festive. So these would be the three things. Now, how much is what is very difficult to sort of, what weight is there in each of these? What is very difficult to sort of separate out. But we start to get some real early indication where from states which have the festive before anyone else, which is, you know, Onam and South and Ganpati and West and parts of South. So we should see. But there is nothing structurally so wrong that merits, you know, a negative outlook or anything. So I would still say, as we had said, that a 5 to 6% growth is certainly conceivable going forward.
So, sir, and on the new launches, if you could give some color on that.
Yeah, so we have a pipeline which goes right through till April, and as you know, we introduced some 5 or 6 variants in quarter four itself. And of course, this quarter we are, our effort is to stabilize them, make sure that they achieve full penetration across the 4,000 stores, etc. And as things sort of roll out, that is a very, very important lever of growth for us. We will continue to introduce new products.
Okay. We also noticed that export three-wheeler has of late picked up. So any outlook you can share on that market?
It's I can't single out any single country, because the great thing about this development is that it is absolutely across the board, you know, right from, you know, key markets of Philippines, where we're doing 2,500 units, 2,000 to 2,500 units per month with 90% share, going down to, you know, places in Africa and more so in Latin America, etc. It's a all-round growth, and I think it is reflective more of a revival of the industry, revival of private financing, which is very, very crucial for three-wheeler. The confidence when that the private financiers get, that translates into financing of three-wheelers, which then, you know, leads to sale for us. So I would say it is all these happy things all across the board.
Great, sir. Thanks so much. I'll come back in the queue.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Amyn Pirani from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. My first question is actually, you know, a continuation on the three-wheeler export thing. Now, you know, several years ago, we had one large market, Egypt, which was, you know, if I remember correctly, 1/3 of our entire, you know, three-wheeler exports. So part A would be, is there any update as to what's happening in that market? Because it used to be a very large contributor for us in three-wheeler exports. And secondly, you know, like two-wheeler exports, which are recovering well, and, you know, hopefully we will see them go back to pre-COVID or rather historical peak soon. How should we think about three-wheeler exports? Are there any large pockets or specific markets which could become, you know, significantly large over the next, say, 2 to 3 years?
See, rewinding it even a little bit more, 60-70% of our three-wheeler portfolio used to be Sri Lanka. And then one day Sri Lanka went to India. And that was the first, you know, boot on our backside to get off the office table and start to develop markets. And then, and of course, we, those days used to sell 2,000 units in three-wheelers, but then we increased it to 6,000. But over the years, I think the transformation which the team has achieved is that we have developed three-wheelers in 23 different countries which had never seen a three-wheeler before. And one of them, for example, is Philippines, which I just referred to. There was no three-wheeler over there. We went and talked to people, and it started with 100 units, 500 units, and now, like I was telling you, 2,000 to 2,500 units. There are many, many, Ghana, Mexico, Bolivia. I mean, I can give you many, many examples. There are some where we tried, but the three-wheeler didn't take traction, like Uganda and Nepal, etc. So this has now become a continuous exercise in the exports team. There's a continuous market development which takes place. And they, right now, I can say that some 8-10 new countries, the product is being seeded, the authorities are being engaged with so that we have the requisite permissions, etc., and the consumer, and the commercial model is being put in place. It's, there are some which seem like stars, and there are some which I think will take some more slogging. But I will hold myself back from naming these for competitive reasons.
Sure. That perspective is helpful. Second question is actually on two-wheelers, and again a two-part question, if I may. You had mentioned last quarter that you are thinking or looking for a lower price or a lower segment 125cc. Is there any update on that? And would that be a Pulsar or a non-Pulsar brand? And again, related question: we see that in the export market, it appears to me that more of your brands have had success. Like a Pulsar is doing well, but a Dominar is also doing well. Obviously, KTM is there, but Boxer also does very well. Whereas in India, correct me if I'm wrong, we are becoming more and more Pulsar centric. So, comments there would be helpful.
Yeah. So the first question, that project is very much on. We are early believers of the 125cc segment, even before it became big through the Discover 125, and then of course later on also with BS6 and the other changes which happened of ABS at that time, we bet on the 125cc segment and extended the Pulsar brand and made quick entry into the top half of the 125cc segment. So we are believers in that. We also believe that the best way to take share in the 100-110cc segment in a profitable way is to upgrade the customer to an entry-level 125cc. Therefore, work is going on over there, and we hope to present it to the market soon. And we'll of course talk to you about it. At this stage, I cannot say that whether it will be a Pulsar brand or it will be some other brand. I think most likely it will be a non-Pulsar brand. But these are famous last words. Things can change closer to the launch time also. In terms of your observation of the brand portfolio in international versus domestic, that observation is correct. But the international markets are, by the nature of their structure, they are very varied. So you have from a Haiti and from an Angola to Turkey, high-paying Turkey and all that. So therefore, the segments are very, you get the full spectrum of segments national markets. And it is not possible to service the entire spread of segments, which starts from a taxi driver. Now, dedicated taxi driver segment is only now emerging in India. Dedicated, meaning the guy doesn't use it for personal use, only using it for other things. But it has always existed in Africa, and that's the main 95% of that business there. There's no personal segment in Africa. Well, maybe 2-3%. But in Latin America too, it's largely personal, but some. The penetration of the 250cc class, the quarter liter class, many markets in Latin America, Southeast Asia, motorcycling is more than commuting. I would differentiate between India and those. For example, people will not shy of buying a expensive twin-cylinder 250cc bike as a commuter. But in India, people will say, oh, for this much price, maybe I can get a car or I can get a second-hand car, so why I should. So in India, it's more of a commuting market. In many parts of Latin America, Europe, it is more of a sports market. So therefore, you find greater traction for brands like Dominar, etc. We sell four times the Dominars in Mexico than we sell in India. And that is a phenomenon of the consumer side. And that's why we've been focusing so hard. And I must also say, the places like Turkey and Mexico and these places, we have gone and slogged for 5 years to build this segment in those markets. I remember people never used to come for our activation. And then we all said that let's put up all women racing team
and all men racing activation, and started getting people, then some people started getting onto the bikes, and you know, and then of course their passion starts to come across. So that's why you have a wider portfolio of brands.
Thank you for the detailed explanation, sir. Very helpful. I'll come back in it.
The next question is from the line of Aditya Jawar from Investec. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for the opportunity. So clearly a very good performance in export. It would be great if you can, you know, throw some light on the Brazilian market. It clearly seems that from Horizon 3 market, it has moved to Horizon 1. What is our strategy to tap that market? Are the products, you know, suitable with the flex fuel option? And what is our distribution strategy? What kind of volume we should expect in Brazil in 27-28? That's the first question.
Okay. Yeah, Brazil is, you know, the top 5 markets in the world. It's not an easy market to crack open for 2 reasons. One is, of course, the manufacturing and regulatory requirements are such that it needs a certain kind of compliance. Second is the competitors are very strong. Just a couple of competitors hold 90% share, so the competitive ratio is, you know, very, very adverse. And actually, another reason, Brazil, as you know, is a very large country, much, much larger than India, and therefore distribution plays a key role. Demand is widespread, and distribution plays a key role, so viability of distribution is important. And therefore, it's a long-term game. It's not something which, you know, you can walk in and start to build leadership, etc. Considering the fact that it's you're competing there with very evolved and mature high-quality brands, our strategy was flexed to enter from the top. And therefore, we entered Brazil through 400cc, very conscious that this is a smaller segment than, let's say, the 150cc segment, which is the bulk of the segment. But we said that we must enter from the top and establish, and there are a lot of temptation. I will tell you, the whole thing is to build scale as fast as possible, get the volumes, and there were opportunities in the 100cc segment, this, that, but those keep getting trashed around over there. And we felt no compromise. We should build a very top-class network which is comparable to the best brands in the country, Honda, Triumph, Kawasaki. Our stores should be comparable to them. And so therefore we took the premium route in. We were fortunate that the country and the customers have accepted the Dominar brand, the Bajaj brand, and the product. I must say, I mean, till the time, you know, now I realize how these movie producers feel like. They make a good movie, but, you know, till the time it hits the screens, nobody knows there's going to be a hit or a flop. We had done all the research, this, that, and the other, but till the time you enter the market, you can't say. So I was pretty relieved. All of us were pretty relieved that Dominar had got accepted very well. And therefore, I said, we will continue this strategy of attacking the top end of the segment. We have made a very discontinuous move last month by introducing the Pulsar 150 over there, which is aimed at the belly of the market, which is the delivery boy segment, the commercial segment. And it's the best in class. But you got to really earn your badge over there, because the delivery segment seeks reliability, zero downtime, and very fast turnaround at the service centers. And therefore, we know that we will have to slog it over there, but that is the thin end of the wedge at the mass level. And at the same time, as I just said, we have expanded the capacity to 50,000 units. I mean, we will be expanding the capacity. It's already gone up from 20 to 30,000. And by the end of, I think, by the time we hit quarter four, it should be into the 50,000 units. And as that expands,
further expansion for 2027-28, because the lead times are 6 months every time for each of these expansions. So we are taking it in a very calibrated way. We are not going big bang. We are going the premium way. We are going calibrated way because we know that there are dealerships, vendors who are now getting reliant on us. So it's not going to be a sharp curve. And at the same time, we are ensuring that we deliver a positive P&L. And I'm very happy to say that, you know, it's this quarter has been pretty good. We are in good green zone. So continue to expand the premium envelope, build distribution, and start attacking the mass segments now onward, and in calibrated way build the capacity, 50,000 and then 100,000 in that manner, but step by step.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pramod Amthe from InCred Equities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. So I wanted to get your thought process on the expected regulation on ABS. How do you see it technically feasible, and also the supply chain, is it geared up to do the same, CBS versus ABS?
Yeah, the putting the ABS on the 100 below, I mean in the 125cc and below segment, is certainly going to put huge requirements on the supply chain. The estimation of the industry as a collective, I'm talking about, not just as Bajaj Auto, because as you can imagine, this is a very important discussion within the industry, is that it could take anything between 12 to 24 months to just get the supply chain right if every single two-wheeler has to be equipped with ABS. Second, we feel that the cost implications of this are high, and you have seen it in the past. You know, we all know that the last peak of the Indian two-wheeler industry was 18-19, and after that, even last year, we have not been able to reach, go back to 18-19 peak. And one of the major contributory factor to this has been the cost increases which have occurred due to regulatory requirements, due to things like insurance, premium, and stuff like that. And, I mean, we slog it away to reduce even 500 rupees of cost, and if suddenly costs are going to increase because of ABS, you can imagine that it will definitely have a dampening effect on demand. There are options. We are all very, very clear that, of course, the two-wheeler rider has to be made safer. The good thing is that the government is in discussion and dialogue with us on this. And have asked us for more data, what are the other options which are more effective as well as cost-effective to deliver a more safe solution. And those dialogues are on as we speak. And hopefully there will be a good resolution to this, and then we will see how exactly sort of it pans out.
Sure. Thanks for that detailed answer. Second one is with regard to market share. Some of your new activations did yield a substantial wholesale market share jump in March and April. Then it drastically fizzled down as we got into May and June. Can you give some more color or depth what has gone slow in the recent? Is it sub-segment performance or the product responses have been slower to come through? Because it didn't ultimately reflect in the Vahan market share. So I wanted to get some more depth of it.
I don't want to get into splitting the hair so much, because you see, you're right that the traction, you know, every week the traction changes. And we are now talking about a band of 1.5% movement in a few weeks. It's very, very difficult to give you an answer. I'm also seeking that answer, frankly speaking. By the way, I'm not getting convinced that this is a precise answer from what I'm getting.
Okay.
For example, there's a
complexity. There are weights in the market. The markets where we are, our market shares are the highest, which is generally, you know, we are much stronger in the south. South has been in a little bit of a decline. But some part like Uttar Pradesh and all have been in double, very handsome double-digit growth. Now, if I, one way to look at it is to separate out the weight of the market. So, I do not, so that has another implication. So, looking, sort of standing back and looking at it, I don't think that the product is an issue at all. Pricing here and there was an issue. There were certain gaps in our product. For example, we didn't have a single seat, which is very, very important for a commuter category. We didn't. We had split seats in our higher-end, in the Pulsar new series. So we brought in a single seat. That is giving us... we calibrated the price, equating it to competition, in our high-performance NS series. And that has immediately brought back the market. So there are these calibrations which are there. And now, in April and May, for example, if I see, the market share for 125cc plus is higher than in the previous quarter. So I would rather wait for a few more, couple of more months to see how the market share is moving. But from ground, the report is product acceptance, there is not an issue. The pricing is now well matched to competition. Activation is on stream. And I think we have been making good progress in April and May, as you said. June numbers and July numbers start to get a bit obfuscated by this monsoon and this and that and the other. So we are going in, going forward in August and all with full confidence that we should be, you know, advancing on the 125cc plus segment.
Yes. Thanks and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Gunjan Prithyani from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. Just a quick clarification firstly. The 125cc affordable bike, you sort of said that we'll come back. Is it due for a launch this year or, you know, the timelines around that have been shifted?
The timelines have not shifted, but I can't, let me please, give me the benefit of keeping some surprise up my sleeve. No, can't be so transparent, everything is done. If these transcripts were not available, I would have told you, but I think I will just refrain. I'm very tempted to tell you, but I will just shut up.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, my question is on export business. I mean, you did talk about Brazil optimism. I think Africa is another important market for us. That's really not come back in a big way yet, right? So if I just think export outlook beyond this year, I mean, this year you've given 15-20% sort of guidance, but where are we on Africa, which will sort of help us extend the growth beyond this year as well?
Yeah, it's very difficult to say, but what I'm really happy about the export business delivering highest retails outside Nigeria. I mean, if you just keep, see, Nigeria was 50,000 units for us when we did 210,000. 54,000 units we were doing. Today we are doing 14,000-15,000. So that's almost a 40,000 gap with from our highest peak, which has been covered by all other markets. This is a very important dimension for everyone to understand because in a 200, and that is why we are at about 180 or odd. But if I take Nigeria out and compare the numbers, then that's what I said right in the beginning. We are, clocking the highest ever retails. Nigeria itself was showing, you know, progressively growth to 30,000 units, etc. But it is still, I'm talking about our numbers, and we are at about 50-60% market share there. But it has slowed down. I think it's the single biggest reason over there is the currency-led inflation, which has sort of dampened demand. Purchasing power is eroded, and the ticket prices of the rides have not gone up. We monitor them quickly. So there, but the motorcycle prices have gone up. So the payback on a motorcycle, if it is around 18 to 24 months, it's a fantastic solution for self-employment. And of course the mobility needs are there. But the moment it starts to go beyond that, the demand starts to get dampened. So we are looking at the period, hopefully that with this stability, and I must say that the crashing Naira, at least that phenomena is stopped, and there is some convergence of the grey market and the white market for currency. That's a very good thing. And now the inflation has to sort of ease so that these ticket prices and all can start to go up and, you know, improve the payback on bikes and people start to come back to the purchase cycle. Now, exactly, those are the phenomena which have to play out. Now, exactly when this will happen, etc., we just have to wait and watch. But our policy is don't overextend the exposure. So just keep controlling the business and be on top of it. We are trying to keep our flock of retailers together. There's no other company in Nigeria by far which has these networks spread like us of 600 to 800 retailers. And right now we are very, very keen that we continue this. I mean, at its peak it goes to 800, but we have 600. There's no other company with that footprint, and our objectives are those. And then as the market returns, we are confident we will get these. But it's very difficult for me to say. And you are very right in making the observation. If Nigeria starts to come back, I mean, it give a very decisive bump up to our business. Unfortunately, there is no other market in the world which can shift the needle so dramatically in such a short period of time as Nigeria if it returns.
Okay. And my second question is on the EV profitability comment that, you know, was mentioned in the opening remarks. Did I hear it right that you said that three-wheeler electric profitability now surpasses the ICE three-wheeler profitability? And, some color on that. And this whole rare earth shortage, which, you know, thanks for calling it out so transparently, is it fair to say that, you know, when we get into the second quarter, if the EV business mix reduces, that sort of helps us in the overall profitability? Is that reading correct to have?
So, Gunjan, I'll take that. The comment I made in my opening remarks was that the electric two-wheeler plus the electric three-wheeler, so therefore the entirety of the electric portfolio, is now nearing double-digit EBITDA margin from what might have been a deep red some time back. Right? That's the first thing I mentioned. The second thing I mentioned was that when you look at the unit economics for Chetak alone per se, the unit economics has moved to some of the models in the new platform that we have, which was launched in December last year. Some of those Chetak models have moved to an EBITDA positive, marginal as it might be, to an EBITDA positive with the new platform. So that those are the two comments that I made on electric profitability. Yeah. The second piece. So I hope that clarifies. It's nothing about I didn't make any comment at the moment on electric three wheelers. That by and large continues to remain what we said in the past, which is give or take, it is almost at parity with the ICE CV margin with the PLI thrown in. Yeah, so that remains unchanged. The point I made differently today was the entirety of the EV portfolio with two plus three wheelers put in, coming to near double digit EBITDA margin. To your second point, well, if there is a mix impact, we've called it out in terms of mentioning given current visibility of about 50-60% on electric scooters and about 70-80% on electric three-wheelers relative to our plans. And our plans obviously envisage a step up because we were also planning for a big festive season. But if that currently does not play out, then I think you've got to look at it from two perspectives. One is that there will be a mixed benefit that will come in obviously because electric gets thrown out and that is lower than the enterprise margin. You also got to consider the fact that there will be an operating leverage impact that might come through.
I think the point I was mentioning is that the tailwind on margin that you will, that we likely will see this time will be on account of the fact of where the rupee is currently trending. Yeah, and that's given that we are almost halfway through the quarter, we know what those levels are. So we will look, of course, to use this opportunity also to make a few competitive investments because these moments don't come always. So if that were to flow right through the quarter, of course, it will help in the rebuild of margin that we may have lost in this last quarter, but also will allow us the opportunity to make a few competitive investments.
Okay. Got it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chandramouli Muthiah from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, and thank you for taking my questions. I have three questions. The first one is just on the e-rickshaw launches. Just want to understand what you think could be a fair market share. I think on the ICE three-wheelers, we enjoy close to 70%. On the electric passenger three-wheelers, you mentioned earlier that you're close to 35%. But e-rickshaws is a more fragmented market, so just want to understand what you would think over the steady-state period could be a fair market share. Second question is just around rare earth situation. If over a 3 to 4 quarter period we are able to de-risk and offset, if we were to source from non-China sources for the entirety of our portfolio or replace HRE with rare earth or other solutions, just want to understand what you think could be potential inflation on the BOM cost or for your electric two-wheeler / three-wheeler portfolio. And the last one is just on the new platform on Chetak. At this stage in August of 2025, what is the rough mix of the new platform, which you mentioned is positive EBITDA margin in the Chetak portfolio? Thank you.
Okay. So on e-ricks, e-ricks are about 45,000, like I said, per month. And 90% of these are very cheap solutions with lead acid. Ours is, of course, a lithium ion based, built for purpose e-rick. And of course, it will come at a premium to the belly of the market. Quite frankly, at this point of time, we have not yet got onto, you know, what will be our market share and this, that, and the other. Our immediate objective is to, which means for the next 3 or 4 months, is to put out this, to put out the e-rick and observe its adoption and develop a playbook so that we can go and upgrade. We are quite, in our three-wheeler business, our teams are very deft at upgrading and making, you know, upgrading and transferring people from one segment to the other, and I give the example of, you know, the entire diesel segment, then moving into the CNG segment. So they go park by park, and they have that skill and capability. But we have to really understand the context. What do they drive? How much do they drive? What are their earnings? Where are they, you know, what are the patterns of driving, routes, etc. So really our first objective is to get the playbook right, make sure that the product acceptance is good. And I would say the time to talk about market shares, etc., will probably be for 26-27. I would say that, of course, we will grow volumes, but I think the real scale-up phase will commence a bit later, maybe, I don't know, February, March, or maybe April, May, or what, depends on how the next couple of months go. Your next question was on the HRE. Yeah. So there is a there is, like I said, a set of three initiatives. You know, one is, of course, to look at very simply replacing HRE with LRE based out of China, to also look at LRE type of products but outside China, and then to look at non-LRE products, the ferrite-based products, which is probably going to take some more time. Immediately, we do not see any great inflation because also
the component cost or just the magnet cost in the full bill of materials is not of great significance. So we have to work out what will happen when it goes to completely different alternate sources. But we are not really very concerned about it, you know, dramatically affecting the bill of materials. And then finally, you had asked about
profitability.
Yeah, just the Chetak new platform, and what is the mix?
The new platform is now 85% of our total portfolio.
So I think, Chandru, your question was new platform. New platform, as Rakesh was calling out, is we had progressed with it. The last transition that had to happen was of the affordable variant, which is the one which sells for the 1 lakh and thereabouts. So with the launch of the 3001 that we've now put out, that completes the full transition. So the whole portfolio has now, with this launch, moved to 100% on the new platform, which is giving us the better economics. So which I mentioned that a couple of models on the new platform have already moved to being EBITDA positive.
All right, gotcha. If I could just clarify the models that are EBITDA positive, just trying to understand what that might be in terms of percentage share in our Chetak.
I would get to unit level profitability, but to tell you that, you know, it's the first time with the new platform that we have got to EBITDA profitability on a couple of them.
Got it, that's helpful. And just want to check on BACL, what is the current run rate on quarterly profit after that?
So BACL is now running a profitable book. Its profit for the current quarter is 100 crores, it's 105 crores, on a book size of about 12,000 crores. I'm anticipating that we will end the year with a book size of anywhere between 18,000 to 19,000 crores. And you will clearly see the current run rate of profit being multiplied. So that's how it currently stands.
Thank you very much and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pramod Kumar from UBS Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the opportunity. Rakesh, one question on the rural side, because rural has been better than urban as per most of the participants across categories. But at the same time, you're not seeing much of a revival in the 100cc demand. So just want to understand your perspective, whether we are seeing a bit of a what do you say, pyramid being formed in the rural markets as well, where some of the categories are doing segments, and if that's the case, what you, is it possible categories continue to gain more momentum rather than the 100cc kind of coming back for good? So just your thoughts on that, and also linked to that, electrification, are you seeing offtake improving in the rural economy, or the rural consumer is embracing electric vehicles more and more in larger proportions going forward, because that could opportunity for you? So that's the first question, sir.
Okay. I must say that your audio was a bit muffled, so I got a gist of what you're asking, but I hope I'm answering the right question. My understanding is correct. There is a certain revival in rural demand, but, you know, we monitor... I would like to separate rural, frankly speaking, into two parts. One is deep rural and the second is rural. Deep rural, I would simply say, is those places which have got gram panchayats, and rural is, you know, jila panchayats and all. But panchayats, when a town or a village is run by a panchayat, we call it rural. And so that's the, and gram panchayats are deep rural. We find that deep rural is still struggling a little bit, but the other rural, slightly larger rural, smaller towns, particularly agricultural trading towns, are improving. The 100cc phenomena cuts across rural and urban. You know, there are people, it's not that 100cc is only or largely bought in rural and not much bought in urban. That's not the case. I think that segment
particularly in urban areas, that segment of our country is still very weak in the sense that it is returned, but their savings have not returned after COVID. And the things like rental inflation has become very, very high. People are trying to save money for buying a home and all that. And to some extent, private finance companies are stricter with their norms in these areas, because there have been instances in many finance companies of, you know, taking multiple loans, etc. So we see a little bit of tightening on the finance company front. So these phenomena are affecting the weaker parts of sections of our society, we who generally tend to buy the 100cc. So I say that while rural is coming back, I'm not seeing so much of a shift in the relative growth rates of below, of 100cc and 125cc plus. I'm not seeing a convergence. So it's still 125 plus cc is outpacing the 100cc for the reasons which I sort of tried to describe.
And Rakesh, on electric adoption of EVs, is it seeing any uptick in rural and break it down for deep rural and rural market?
Yeah. It is actually following the penetration of scooters, if I see. If you take a place, for example, like Bihar, where the penetration of scooters itself is low compared to, let's say, a Maharashtra, you will find that electric penetration is low. And why is scooter penetration in Bihar low? Because, you know, it has more intercity travel. It has not as good roads, particularly in the interior areas as Maharashtra, which means that the smaller wheel scooter is not the right solution. There are less women riders in Bihar compared to, let's say, Maharashtra. All these phenomena partially drive the scooter penetration. And the electric adoption is actually following the scooter penetration. Wherever scooter penetration is higher, electric adoption is also higher.
Fair enough. So last question. I'm just trying to understand the domestic dealer franchise, because we have four buckets of operations, but for most of our domestic motorcycle dealers, there's only one bucket. And the market share there, hence, and the volumes what they generate on the franchise is also quite important. So just wanted to understand your thoughts on the dealer viability up and scale for the business, with market share kind of slipping closer to the 11% mark. So if you just can share your broad thoughts or any plan of Bajaj making a huge comeback on the domestic market share front, because we've been so successful across so many markets. So India, in that sense, kind of puzzles as to why we are not able to kind of get the franchise to much higher market share. So if you can help us understand that, that will be really helpful. Thank you.
Well, my view is dramatically opposite yours. You know, you are looking at it as a dealer viability issue. I think our dealers have never had it so good, because you are looking at it from only one lens. Our network strategy is a corporate network strategy. We are saying, we are offering, when a person becomes a Bajaj Auto dealer, the person becomes, gets a potential opportunity to represent Bajaj for motorcycles, three-wheelers, Chetak, Triumph, KTM. Five businesses. There is no other company in a similar way which can offer five very different kind of opportunities. And as a result of which, for example, Chetak, we are now at 330 Chetak experience centers, which are exclusive Chetak network. Pardon me if my numbers are slightly amiss here and there, but I would say 80 to 90% of the Chetak experience centers have gone to our existing dealers. Where they have not gone, it is because maybe we didn't have a dealer there, or maybe the dealer didn't want it there, or maybe the dealer was not good enough. Triumph, I would say 65% has gone to existing dealers.
KTM, that started much earlier than when we put this policy in place 3-4 years back, maybe 50%. So dealers with ambition, dealers with funding, and dealers with capability, Bajaj Auto is a fantastic opportunity. Because today, I mean, you take Chennai, our successful three-wheeler dealer is now our successful motorcycle and Triumph dealer. You know, a three-wheeler, of course, we demand different capabilities in a Triumph and in a three-wheeler. But, I mean, these are the examples which are coming to my mind. I'm not singling out Chennai and all that. These type of examples are there everywhere. So, I think we are very, very confident in engagement. We have a network team which in a matrix way works right across the entire business units. The second piece which you asked was about, you know, dramatic change in market share or something like that, right? So, see, now if you say, for example, can we achieve a dramatic shift in Brazil? I don't think we can. This is what I went, but of course we can create a very, very sound business which has got a growing market share, which has got a good bottom line, which has got a good top line, which has got good brand love. I think there are many more metrics to look at beyond just a rapid acceleration of market share. And I think rapid has its consequences. And as you know, with Bajaj Auto, we like to get all faces of the Rubik's Cube right, which is, you know, market share, growth, profitability, and all that stuff. So, and in a large market like this, in a competitive market like this, in a price-sensitive market like this, where we have entrenched and capable competitors, I would say to achieve a dramatic shift in market share would mean that one or two faces of the Rubik's Cube will go off, and we would not like that. We've tried it many years ago with, you know, it's not sustainable. So we don't advocate that path.
Yeah, sir, thanks a lot, and I wish you all the best. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for the day. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Anand Newar, Head Investor Relations, for closing comments.
Thank you, Abhirat, and thank you everyone for joining us on the call. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of Bajaj Auto Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect the lines.